You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Friday, February 17th. The weekend is upon us, just about, and hopefully we'll kick it off right with a good show today. My guest here in about 15 minutes will be Gary McCollum. Gary, who is an attorney here in the Lexington, Kentucky area where we broadcast from. In fact, goes to the same parish as me, the fantastic Mary Queen of the Holy Rosary. I became a little bit more familiar with Gary this past year as he ran for public office. He ran for the 75th House seat as the Republican nominee here in the state of Kentucky. Was unable to unseat the incumbent, the Democrat Kelly Flood, who's been in that seat, I don't know, maybe 6 years? I'll have to ask Gary about that when he's on. But, you know, we had a great conversation with Gary after Mass a couple of weeks ago. I really respect and appreciate his perspective on things. And so we're going to talk a little bit today just about his own story, how he got involved in politics, how he sees his faith intersecting with politics. And we'll also talk some about the current state of politics, particularly after that memorable press conference yesterday. You got to say this for our president. The guy makes news. I mean, presidential press conferences, not usually news in and of themselves, but it's a whole new ball game with number 45 here, Donald Trump. And yesterday, back in his sort of campaign mode that works for him, you got to admit, got him in the office, lambasting the media, personal attacks, politics of personal destruction, all that stuff on display yesterday. And so I want Gary's take on that, particularly in this, man, this partisan world. It's unbelievable how it seems like the only two perspectives are you either affirm everything the president says and defend it, or you criticize everything the president says and you go all in against him. No room for nuance. Maybe it's always been that way. I don't know. But we'll have Gary on in the next segment. That should be a good conversation. Some other things we'll get into today. We'll kind of wrap up Friday with some What Were You Thinking awards toward the end of the show today. A few good ones for you. And we'll talk about Jesus' odd recruiting tactics in today's gospel reading. So all that and more. Certainly, if you want to be a part of the program, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. Or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. My question of the day, it is the birthday of the late Thomas Watson Sr., who really, he was the head of IBM when it became IBM. Forget what it was called before. So I'm asking a question today that provokes strong opinions, though for whatever reason, I haven't gotten a lot weighing in yet on social media. And that is this: are you a PC person or are you a Mac person? PC person or a Mac person? So give me a shout. I've always been a PC person, mainly because Macs have typically been a little bit out of my price range, though my only experiences with Apple products are iPads, and with those I have been really very, very pleased and intrigued by the idea that you don't get so many viruses when it comes to Macs. So if you want to weigh in and sing your Apple song, or shoot down the Apple mythology, you can do it on the program today. Call or text 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Daughter landed yesterday afternoon. Thanks for the prayers. Our daughter Chelsea, she'll be in for a visit. Our 24-year-old, wow, how do I have a 24-year-old? But you know what? She wanted Dad's fantastic potato soup last night, and I was happy to oblige. Of course, I have to give all the credit to my food crush, and that is Reed Drummond, the Pioneer Woman. If you ever go, she's got this potato soup recipe that is to die for. Anytime you're pouring heavy whipping cream into your potato soup, Oh, man. And you start also with bacon grease. And then for the coup de grace, you throw some chunks of bacon into the soup. Really, really good. Not good for the waistline, but good stuff. And glad to have the excuse to make it. Glad to have my daughter home. The gospel reading today is kind of coupled with yesterday's reading. If you'll recall, yesterday's meeting is reading was that climactic scene where Jesus is with his disciples, and they are on the way to Caesarea Philippi, and he asks his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" It's a question that has been begging to be asked since the beginning of Mark's gospel. If you notice, as I said, Mark's gospel, very much almost breathless in its constant action. It's that idea of, if you've ever seen the Narnia movies, you know, Aslan is on the move. Jesus in Mark's gospel, not a lot of pausing and teaching. He's on the move. He's come announcing a kingdom. He's come embodying that kingdom. He's landed, as C.S. Lewis described it, behind enemy lines, and he's come to claim what is rightfully his. But there are various debates, different responses to his miracles. This is why people who say things like, you know, I wish I'd lived at the time of Jesus, because if I'd have just lived at the time of Jesus, I wouldn't have any doubts. I would have seen his miracles, and I would have believed. Just like all the people did back then, right? I mean, some did. Large crowds did for a while. After, in fact, today's gospel reading and yesterday's, the crowds got noticeably thinner as Jesus began to set his face toward Jerusalem and the high noon of the cross and all that that would involve. But others saw his miracles and doubted, blamed it on demons. I mean, I think we're naive. We forget what we have, and that's the benefit of 2,000 years of church history and scripture that help us see these miracles and understand them more readily than if we're confronted with them in the moment. It would have been very disorienting, the whole process, I think. Anyway, so Jesus, the question is begged, who do people say that I am? He asked his disciples that, and then he asked them the question, as I said yesterday, that Mark, as a gospel writer, wants every person who reads this gospel to ask themselves, but who do you say that I am? Peter said to him in reply, you're the Messiah. I recently taught over the Gospel of Mark to my senior New Testament class. I told them that one of the things, really, if you want a way of looking at Mark's Gospel, a lens to look at it, you can almost look at it in terms of three themes or movements. There's the question of Jesus' identity. Who is he? Who is this one who wind and waves obey? Who is this who casts out demons? Who is this? Right? So identity. And Mark, from the very beginning, sets out his own particular perspective that he's Son of God, he's Messiah, and of course, Jesus' own favorite title for himself, Son of Man. The second, after identity, is mission. What has he come to do? Why is he here? And the third is response. Mark's gospel, as I said, not set out as simply an academic treatise, a biography that you can pick up and put down at your leisure. The question begs a response. Who do you say that he is? And once you answer that question, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to give him your allegiance, your submission, your surrender? Is he worth centering your whole life around? So identity, mission, response. Now this passage, yesterday's gospel coupled with today's gospel, you see that threefold movement or theme in microcosm. It's like a bouillon cube of sorts of the whole gospel of Mark. Because as we said yesterday, who do the people say that I am? Who do you say that I am? Who's the identity? What's his mission? This is when Jesus yesterday said after Peter gives the right response, inspired by the Holy Spirit, he began to teach them, Jesus did, that the Son of Man must suffer greatly and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, the scribes, and be killed and rise after 3 days. He spoke this openly. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Peter didn't understand this aspect of Jesus' mission, what he'd come to do. This is why, you know, put a true-false question on the test I gave over Mark, and the statement was, Jesus' death cut short his earthly mission. True or false? The correct answer, of course, is false. His death did not cut short his earthly mission. Other great figures in history, yes, but with Jesus, his death was his mission. He came to give his life as a ransom for many. So that's his mission. And then we see today's passage, which is about our response. He summoned the crowd after rebuking Peter, setting him straight in terms of what his mission was. He summoned the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "Whoever wishes to come after me must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and that of the gospel will save it." In other words, our response is not just a cognitive confession. We do that in Sunday Mass. We stand to say the creed. It doesn't cost us much, at least in this culture. And as I said, even the demons believe. Our proper response is to take up the cross, is to embrace the life of a disciple, even though that means inevitable suffering. We're getting ready to enter into Lent. It's a good reminder of that. The cross, in that context, those hearing those words, they would have heard simply an instrument of brutal torture and retribution. We have, of course, sanctified that image over time, but don't ever let it be forgotten that to embrace Jesus is to embrace his cross. There's no way around it. We'll be back with Gary McCollum on the other side of the break. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Friday the 17th. Pleased to be joined in the studio by my friend Gary McCollum. Gary serves as Assistant General Counsel of Alliance Coal here in Lexington, Kentucky, where we broadcast from. He's worked in that role since 2012. Also serves as Commissioner on the Bipartisan Kentucky Commission on Community Volunteerism and Service, appointed by former Governor Steve Beshear in 2014. As of yesterday, he also serves on the board of the Southland Association, which is a local organization here in Lexington, a member of the Republican National Lawyers Association, and a former candidate in the Kentucky 75th House District. He has two children, Colleen and Cooper, and is a parishioner at the best parish in Lexington.
Yeah.
My apologies to everybody else, Mary Queen of the Holy Rosary. Gary, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to come in and talk.
Absolutely. I promoted you on the show today as the Gary McCollum because not only is that your Twitter handle,
right,
but there is another Gary McCollum in politics in another state.
Yeah.
Different side of the political aisle.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think he keeps handing out my email address because I'm getting a number of emails from Democrat politics in Virginia right now. And
I think he's gotten in a little trouble, too. There's been maybe some ethics kind of stuff.
There were some issues there, but I keep getting these emails, and I'm collecting my own WikiLeaks dump at this point that I can put out there. So we'll see how that goes. Hopefully he'll stop doing that in the next couple of weeks now that I'm out there broadcasting it.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we've kind of known each other from a distance a little bit at Mary Queen, and we were having a little conversation during the break. You were saying that you've been a Catholic, 7 years now?
Yeah, going on 7 years as of February 10th, I believe.
So just had your anniversary. So, congratulations.
Yeah. Well, time gets away from you. I guess once you're in that campaign mode, you kind of habit of staying in it, and the days just kind of fly by. But yeah, just had an anniversary there, 7 years. And yeah, it's been an amazing ride for me, an amazing journey for me, and one that particularly I know my kids have benefited from as well. Mm. So,
did you grow up going to other churches, Protestant churches?
Well,
or?
So for me, it was a little different situation because we were a military family and we moved around a lot.
Oh,
we
yeah.
never really set down roots anywhere. And my mom was Catholic, but she didn't go to Mass. She kind of fell away from the church. And I've really spent a number of the past 7 years working on her and trying to get her to go back and come celebrate Mass with us. She does for the kids, but that's still a work in process. And for your listeners, obviously, if they could pray for her, I'd really appreciate that. It's certainly a big part of what my family goes through. But we didn't go to... you know, my brother and my sister and I, my parents sort of let us seek out our faith. Sometimes that takes longer than you would have ever possibly imagined. And so I started when I lived in Louisville, 2005, 2006, 2007. I started just going to a Holy Spirit parish there in St. Matthews. And really loved it, but then I moved.
Why Catholic? Was because your mom was Catholic?
It was because my mom.
Yeah,
you know, you always.
That's pretty cool.
You got to fall in line with what mom mom wants. But, you know, I ended up going to Holy Spirit for quite a while, but never went through the RCIA process. And then once I got back here in Lexington, I decided to seek it out more in earnest. And obviously then. Have been a part of the church for the past 7 years.
So tell me about how that, does that intersect in any way with your interest in politics? I know you said you grew up sort of even as a child with firsthand observation. I think this is on your website, you know, in England, even when you're, you know, being a military kid, seeing protests and all the rest.
Yeah, you would see the protests and you know, my parents were always big on, even if you don't agree with somebody, you have to hear them out. You have to listen. We were a very service-minded and honor-oriented family. I think that that's a big part of our faith in particular. That's not necessarily a knock on people who are Protestant, but that was something that was in my mind as I sought out, you know, having a stronger faith and being a part of the church. But when it came to running for office over the past year, I can tell you that is a very deeply spiritual decision to go through and a process that you go through. You know, just this past Sunday, we talked about in the gospel readings, it was the whole let your yes mean yes and your no mean no. And I mean, that really hits home when you're knocking on people's doors and you're talking to them about the issues that are affecting their lives. You want to make sure that what you say is something that you mean. And in between the doorsteps, when you knock on somebody's door, we hit over 9,000 doors, I think, in between those doors, you're thinking about that. You're thinking about the conversation that you just had, and you're thinking about how can I make good on the things that I talked about and the things that would improve these people's lives. So it is, your faith does intersect with politics in that regard, particularly, even if you're not overtly out there championing your religious faith as a part of your run for office.
Sure. You know, I mean, we kind of live in an era where everybody, you know, its opinions are like noses, and with social media, everybody likes to weigh in on politics. And some people toy with, you know, maybe I'd like to run for all. What would you say to somebody? What do they not know about what it takes to actually run, even for a state level office?
Well, I would say do it, which is probably. You know, a lot of people would say it's not for everybody, but I would say do it. We need more people who get out there and are willing to champion for the cause that they believe in. Even if I disagree with them, my hat's off to them for putting their name in the ring, for putting their name on that ballot and getting out there and trying to meet in earnest their neighbors. Here's the other thing. With social media, we don't know our neighbors like we used to.
Right.
And it is an amazing opportunity for you to get out there and meet with people that you would otherwise not intersect with or not even think about because you're too busy on Facebook or you're too busy on Twitter or you're too busy commuting back and forth or you've got all the activities that you've got with your kids. This truly gives you an opportunity to get to know people within your local community. And it's a lot of fun. It's very rewarding, even when you lose. I've told several people since I lost in November that that was a true blessing for me because there are other opportunities for you to get involved in your community. You just need to get out there and seek them out.
Wow. Now, you knew going in, obviously, I mean, you're going up against an incumbent
right.
that was going to be tough.
Right.
Did that temper some of the disappointment in losing?
It didn't. It didn't temper the disappointment. You always want to win. You always want to, you know, you're out there advocating for a reason.
Sure.
But you know it's an uphill battle when you get into that type of situation. And I think we outperformed a lot of expectations through our race in particular, primarily because of how hard we worked. You know, the biggest disappointment was the disappointment that my kids felt.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
That was really hard. The next day, Cooper, my 7-year-old son, and in particular, he was really upset. And then he said to me, well, Dad, I said, well, Cooper, you know that I got more votes than Donald Trump. And I got more votes than Rand Paul within this district. I said, so he said, well, that's a win. I'll take it, Dad.
That's pretty, from a 7-year-old.
Yeah, he was happy with that. And he realized that our hard work had paid off in a lot of respects.
Absolutely. So, I mean, not to put you too much on the spot, do you think you'll run again or you think you're...
At this point in time, I'm not even contemplating that. You know, I really... My kids sacrificed a lot during the course of this campaign. My job sacrificed a lot in that they were very understanding. I'm a bit of a workaholic. I'll go ahead and say that a lot of times in the office around 7, leave around 6:30 or so on nights when I don't have to pick up my kids. So it's I have a tendency to overwork. This made it more of a 8-to-5 job because I was out there trying to meet with folks too. So I'm trying to focus on work. I'm trying to focus on my kids. They've got a Disney trip planned in the next couple of weeks that we're going to be taking. I think they've earned it. So
absolutely.
I'm not even going to think about campaigning for a while.
Well, we only got about a minute and a half left in this segment. I want to kind of segue a little bit to, you know, it is an interesting political climate. I guess it always, you know, I mean, politics is politics and there's some things that never change, but maybe with social media and with the media in general, I mean, your observations, and I'll be interested in those as we move along here in terms of the climate right now. We saw, I don't know if you saw yesterday's press conference with the president, very
animated,
you know, back in campaign mode.
Right.
But we've seen this, I mean, this increased partisanship. Of course, you're part of a political party, but how do you see that infecting even goodwill and the ability to maybe come to some sort of, cohesion on things?
Well, and I think one of the keys is going to be this willingness to listen to the other side. Sometimes that's tough for a political party that has full power, as the Republicans do, both here in Kentucky and then also at the national level right now. I think that what we're going to – if you haven't checked it out already, go and look at Marco Rubio's speech that he gave on the floor, I believe it was last week, about the necessity for partisanship, but in the context of be partisan, be an advocate, at the same time listen and be respectful of the other side.
We'll be back in just a minute with more with Gary McCollum, Lexington resident and attorney, father. We'll be back in just a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
bottom of the hour. Welcome back into the Mike Allen Show here with my friend Gary McCollum, attorney, father, parishioner, Mary Queen of the Holy Rosary, and recent candidate for the 75th House District. Unfortunately disappointed, but as he said, outperformed the president and the national senator, Trump and Paul, who were both in his district. So good stuff. We were talking, having some fun talking about wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little bit of a student of professional wrestling history.
I saw where you recently. You were in Memphis, I think. Amazing what you can learn on somebody's Facebook page. You were at a Jerry Lawler's restaurant down there.
Yeah, I did. I stopped in, and I couldn't help but tag a couple of my fellow professional wrestling fans in that.
See, I grew up watching back in the old, whatever, the small Coliseum in Memphis. It was on TV.
Mid-South Coliseum.
Mid-South with Lance Russell at the microphone and the crazy manager, Hart, Jimmy Hart, I think.
Right.
And Dundee and, oh, yeah, all those guys, Coco Beware.
Yeah, and I look back on it, and in middle school, I was telling you this story during the break. If you don't mind, I'll go ahead and share it with your listeners. But in middle school, they gave opportunities to us to internship or mentorship with any career that we wanted to. And, you know, everybody was choosing attorneys and bankers and doctors. And I told the school board in Hardin County that I wanted to look into being a professional wrestler. And they set me up with those guys from the USWA. I got to go and hang out with them and learn a little bit about their professional wrestling business. I thought, you know, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. Why not take a chance and see what happens? And they couldn't have been nicer. It was a really interesting experience for sure.
You're also in answer of our question, you're definitely a Mac guy, not a PC guy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I had a couple PCs crash on me in a matter of months, and decided I would go ahead and take a chance. And this was back in 2003, right when I got out of law school. I decided I would buy a Mac, and I haven't looked back since then.
Yeah, I asked the question, are you a Mac person or a PC person, and why? And one person commented, Mac and seriously?
Yeah. You shouldn't even have to ask that
you
question.
You Mac snobs.
I mean, come on.
Actually, I've been pretty pleased with my iPads my daughters have had. So anyway. So we were talking about wrestling. We were talking about showmanship. I mean, that's all kind of comes with it. Let's segue a little bit to, I don't know whether you saw that press conference yesterday with Donald Trump. I mean, he brings a little bit of that, a lot of that sensibility
right
to politics. I mean, you've been watching politics a long time. You went to law school in D.C. Have you ever seen anything quite like the Trump campaign and even the early days of the Trump presidency?
I really haven't. It really is sort of a one-of-a-kind phenomenon at this point.
Is it replicable? Or is it just a sui generis?
I really don't know that it is. And I know some people are saying that's a good thing. Some people are saying that it's a bad thing. But I think that that approach and that bombastic nature of just saying really whatever you feel like you need to say in that moment is something that we haven't seen before. So we're in for an interesting next couple of years. You know, I think it resonates with people, though, in a big, big way, and in a way that traditional politicians haven't seemed to get yet. They don't understand that people want plain spoken. They want people who just say what they think and aren't caught up in this culture of a fully vetted speech every time that somebody gets up there.
How do you balance that, you know, with, I guess you could say, the responsibility that comes with, you know, it's one thing to shoot from the hip when you're in a campaign, you know, it's another thing to shoot from the hip when you are a television personality.
Right.
But, you know, when you would, I mean, diplomatic relations, all the inner complexities of politics and all those things, I mean, there's a line to be walked there, I guess, because you can say things that could also have ramifications that are significant.
Yeah, well, but I mean, and let's not forget that there are occasions where even presidents who are considered very polished, like President Obama, have made misstatements on the record. The red line comment, which he admitted in his interview, was a mistake, and it was an off-the-cuff remark that he made, was extremely damaging in terms of the situation in Syria. And we've seen the fallout of that as a result. So it's not that this is it's not that Donald Trump's the only one that's done this and has made comments that are sort of off the cuff and that we have to deal with. I think the key is then surrounding yourself with diplomats and career government service individuals who can say, let's take the big picture that you just laid out and let's refine it and let's get it to a place in which we can work with these other countries in particular, and then also translate it into domestic policies at work. So
it's why, in the sense of, if you're going to take on somebody as president, if you're going to take on the media, you're taking on an entity that is probably by their own fault is not very popular. So, you know, in that sense, every time he does that, it probably only boosts him.
Well, and let's face it. I mean, there is some very real truth in some of the comments that he made yesterday. The notion that there is this underlying, I believe the word he used was hatred in the tone of the comments that are made in the media, is really concerning. I think I posted something else on Facebook a couple weeks ago in which in a New York Times article, it suggested that, you know, Trump wouldn't make it past four-year term. And without any basis for making an assertion like that, to throw that out there and just tuck it into, I believe it was a movie review, that Trump wouldn't make it through a four-year term is really disheartening to me. We should want people to succeed in those offices, even if we disagree with their policies.
Sure.
And then work within the bounds of the law to put forth our vision of what those policies should be. I mean, there should be a compromise. There should be a willingness to work with one another, which we don't have right now in politics.
How do we, you know, from just the local average person who's trying to follow politics, there tends to be this. It's almost these two polar opposites. You know, you've got either the claim that all is chaos in the Trump White House, or you've got his assertion yesterday that his White House is running like a fine-tuned machine. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the likelihood that neither of those is purely true, right? There's some truth in between. But how – I mean, it seems like with media so splintered now and fractured and so many different news sources, it seems almost impossible to try to discern the truth out of those wide, you know, divergences, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's spot on. I think that you have to read a lot. You have to educate yourself. And, you know, for too long, I think that many Americans have just turned to the news and said, well, I'll just accept what I'm hearing there. Now they've got somebody in office who is willing to take the message directly to the people, whether it be through Twitter, whether it be through a press conference like yesterday, and they're willing to take that message to them and bypass the media. At the very least, it gives people the opportunity to question the media and to question the president and look into what's being presented to them and try to discern where that middle ground is. I think that's where we're going to come down on all this, is that people are going to wake up and they're going to have the opportunity to educate themselves on issues.
You know, one of the things that concerns me too a little bit is, and with the it seems like with the heavy partisanship that we have now, it seems like the natural result is that particularly the executive branch is going to grow in power. And this has been happening through many terms, right? But because so you've got this distrust of the media, and so anything that they say to sort of critique the president is dismissed, or it's seen as simply partisan, you know, as it was under President Obama, as just partisan cheerleading. And then you've got these opponents against each other, and so everybody wants to entrench. Who's going to hold the executive branch accountable? That's ultimately, my concern.
Well, and I think that at the end of the day, we have seen a huge expansion of the executive branch over the past 50, 60, 70 years, really since around the time of World War II. And as you see that expansion of that branch, I think that it's due for a natural contraction of power. That, I think, is going to work within the construct of our Constitution, though. I think that you're going to see the legislature take greater hold of its obligations. I think you're going to see the judiciary, as we saw in the Ninth Circuit, you know, their decision on with respect to the immigration executive order, it flew in the face of a lot of precedent.
Mm-hmm.
As I've looked at it, I think that ultimately it would not withstand an appeal up to the Supreme Court. And it does fly in the face of a lot of that precedent. But as a result of that opinion, there's language there that attorneys can use going mm-hmm. forward to contract executive power. And I think that that's something that we could see. We could see the judiciary and the legislature fight back against executive power. Now, if you're a small government conservative, even under, even if you're supportive of President Trump, you may win either way.
Right.
So they're going to the next 4 years is definitely going to be interesting in terms of seeing how things shape within our constitutional framework.
Wow. Gary, we're about out of time. The time flies quickest time in radio. There's lots more to talk about, which just means I want to have you back sometime.
That'd be
all right.
That would be great. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for having me in.
Blessings to you. Blessings to your family and your ongoing work.
Same to you.
Thanks, Gary. All right. We'll be back in just a minute. I'll kind of wrap up with some What Were You Thinkings for the week. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
For the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Again, my question of the day on the birthday of the late founder, well, he was at least the CEO when they changed their name to IBM, which International Business Machines, in case you're wondering, not I've been moved as it used to be back in the days of constant transfers. Anyway, Thomas Watson, are you a PC person or a Mac person? All you Mac snobs, love to hear from you, or those of you who want to defend the honor of the PC. 573-4BREAD-4, you can call or text, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Really enjoyed that conversation with Gary McCollum. Gary, you know, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, people like Gary McCollum, they kind of restore your faith in the integrity of politics. Somebody who, you know, who is seeking public office for the right reasons, because they want to serve, because they care about these issues. And because they like serving people. I mean, how can you not like that? So I appreciate that. Also appreciated, and I'll just let you know, I voted for Gary McCollum in this past fall's. He's in my house. In my house district is represented currently by the incumbent, but I voted for him and was impressed amidst all of the craziness of that last presidential campaign that he had the ability to, like it seems like a lot of people are willing to affirm the good in the Trump campaign, and also to call out that which conflicted with, a faith-shaped perspective on things. And I've appreciated that very much because, I one of the things that's, you know, that it was interesting, we were talking about wrestling and, you know, I think one of the things sometimes about wrestling is, you know, that so much of it is show. It's a good show, entertaining show. But sometimes you wonder, particularly when you get into the big political offices, do these people really believe this stuff? You know, I mean, when you see somebody like a Ted Cruz who can fall in line behind Trump, even after his wife has been insulted and his father's been accused of being the grassy knoll shooter, you know, I mean, you wonder, do these people literally believe this stuff? That's why it's heartening to be around, somebody like Gary McCollum. So anyway, let's we kind of wrapping up the week, and since my show shifted to a 2-hour, we were shifting the What Were You Thinking Awards to one day a week, and so we've got some nominees here on Friday for as we span the globe. Once again, finding examples where people didn't put their best thinking foot forward. This is a story out of Florida. any headline that starts with Florida Man, by the way, if you ever want to follow a funny Twitter account, follow Florida Man, because it shows you how the state of Florida seems to have a disproportionate share of nominees for the What Were You Thinking Award. Anyway, Florida Man charged with trying to blow up Target stores. Why? To tank company's stock. Evidently, a Florida man's alleged plot to set off homemade explosives in several East Coast Target stores was foiled after he asked for help. For someone he asked for help turned him in. It was part of what investigators said was a bizarre attempt to tank the company's stock, which would then allow him to cheaply acquire shares of Target stock before an eventual rebound. Really? My goodness. There are other ways to get ahead, my man. How about our second nominee? Ontario man shoots himself while making necklace out of bullet on Valentine's Day. Nothing says Valentine's Day like gunpowder and lead. Police say a 50-year-old Oshawa, Ontario man suffered a leg wound after attempting to make a necklace out of the bullet. He allegedly shot himself in the leg while attempting to pull apart a bullet with vice grips. The gunpowder inside the bullet caused it to explode and hit the man's thigh, with several bullet casing fragments also stuck in his leg. Don't try this at home, kids. But the winner, since we had Gary McCollum, registered Republican, on the program, let's keep it in the GOP theme. Central Michigan College Republicans, sorry for Hitler-themed Valentine's card. A Central Michigan University Republican student group is apologizing for a Valentine's Day card that mocks Jews who died in the Holocaust. The College Republicans group handed out gift bags to students Wednesday night, including one with a card that said, "My love for you burns like 6,000 Jews." It had a photo of Adolf Hitler and was signed XOXO Courtney. The group apologized on Facebook, saying it doesn't condone anti-Semitism. The card was made and placed in the bag without its knowledge. The group didn't identify the member who placed the card in the bag. Yeah, that's a tough one to recover from right there. The furor and joking about gas ovens, not a good play there for the college Republicans there at Central Michigan University. Anyway, if you've got one to nominate, always love to hear from you. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Anyway, back to the gospel reading for today. As we said, Jesus summoning the crowd with his disciples, saying, "Whoever wishes to come after me must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and that of the gospel will save it." It's one of those instances where you realize Jesus has an odd recruiting pitch. Come follow me, and you will carry a cross. Come follow me and you will be strapped to a lethal injection chair. I mean, it's essentially what he's saying. Yet I do recall a conversation I had years ago with a military recruiter. And I asked a military recruiter, longtime military recruiter, I said, "Have you found it easier to recruit for the military in times of peace or in times of war?" And he said, "Surprisingly enough, in times of war. People are looking for something that matters to give themselves to." So maybe Jesus' recruiting pitch is not so odd after all. Again, Mark's gospel, that threefold theme, right? Identity, who is he? Mission, what has he come to do? And what will my response be? That's not simply a cognitive assent in some sort of an academic sense. It is a willingness to shape your whole life around these truths and to be willing even to suffer for them. I was talking to some engaged couples on Sunday. I asked them if they'd heard of the four rings of marriage. You may have heard of this little joke yourself, right? You got the one engagement ring, you got the two wedding rings. What's the fourth ring? The fourth ring of marriage is suffering. Rimshot, please. I don't say that to depress you. I say, but if you don't think real love involves suffering, you need to look at a crucifix for a while. Because real love, suffering with your beloved, suffering for your beloved, even suffering because of your beloved, it's all part of love. And if we confess, as Peter did, Jesus is the Messiah, it's the great line I heard from, I think it was Chris Stefanik. He said, Jesus didn't suffer so we wouldn't have to. Jesus suffered so we would know how to. That's pretty good. Anyway, let's go to random.org. We'll spin up the Dollar Catechism wheel here to close out the week. We'll go to our random number generator and dial up a number between 1 and 2865. Knowing, of course, that truth is never random but always integrated within the panoramic totality of the faith. 807. All right, the church. This is at the end of a section on the church. The church is this body of which Christ is the head. She lives from him, in him, and for him. He lives with her and in her, irrevocably united with Christ the head. This is, we talk about the body of Christ. We talk about the fact that the body is what makes the person visible, right? The only way that you can even hear me or know that I'm on the other end of this microphone is because of my body, because of my vocal cords and the sounds that are emanating from my material being. It's the body that makes the person visible, much like the sacraments make visible invisible mysteries. Well, if the church is the body of Christ, it is you and me, all of us who are baptized into his body, who make him visible in the world. That old saying that you may be the only Jesus that somebody else ever sees, or that the church in all its diversity and all of its strengths and all of its weaknesses becomes the very image of Christ in the world, it's a heavy thing. And worthy of reflection on how well we are reflecting Christ's presence in the world, and ask for the grace to be even more reflective of who he is. She lives with him, she lives from him, in him, and for him. He lives with her and in her. The more we draw near to him, the more he can be alive in us. We'll be back Monday by God's grace. Again, thanks to Gary McCollum for being on the show. Thanks to Alex for producing and running the board. Hope you have a great weekend. By God's grace, I'll be back with you on Monday, President's Day. This is the Mike Allen Show. You've been listening to Breadbox Media.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.